Hi, this podcast is brought to you by Practicus. Practicus is a recruitment, consulting, and advisory business, specializing in change and transformation. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello, welcome to the next episode of The Data Files. I'm Barry.
And I'm Tony.
And we are super lucky today to be joined by Lydia Collette. Hello, Lydia.
Hello.
Now, Lydia's career has always been in data, but it's super interesting. From working in one of the oldest industries, London Market Insurance, Lydia moved through Ernst & Young, doing data science, into the digital native company Zoopla, and is now the Data and Insight Product Lead at the John Lewis Partnership. Thanks for being with us, Lydia.
My pleasure.
So, Lydia, I was a little baffled when I saw the title of this podcast. What is a data product?
I guess let's look back to how the data function evolved, and we've been answering questions in service of the business for a blimmin' long time, right? That's how we all started, service function. Bob wants to know how many cucumbers he sold in Waitrose, and then Joe wants to know how the sales are doing in the latest John Lewis. And we answer the questions, and we answer the questions time and time again in service. But actually, at some point, these questions start to compound, and actually you need a bit of an ongoing enabling capability to evolve away from just answering questions.
Are you just saying it's a report? Is a data product a report?
I would say a data product is a product that is ingrained in using data to create reusable capability. So, hypothetically, you could call a bit of a report a data product. It's not a very advanced one, but if your reporting's moving into self-serve, then actually you're helping with decision-making with an always-on capability. You could put some buzzwords around it and call it a data product if you tried.
So do you find then that people expect you in your job now to be building AI and machine learning algorithms and calling them data products? Or do you find it's more the how many cucumbers did we sell type question?
So there's a variety of use cases in the business, and you do not need AI to answer them all. And also you don't need to call it AI all the time. Sometimes it's just like a fancy little linear regression model. So I would say there's a variety of answers. We do need to help our data science teams in businesses, including ours, get their models out into production and help users understand what those models are doing instead of just throwing out a prediction into the wild and hoping for the best. So that's part of it. But then if you don't have the foundational capability, you do need to sort your reports out. So half and half.
Is it a decision support tool with some inference built in with expert analysis? Is it that sort of thing? Or
yeah, so I think there's a stage that's definitely decision support. So if you think about outside of my industry, Google image search. So when you put an image into Google, there's some clever smarts in the background, right, that go, oh, okay, I can tag this and see that it's a cat and there's this and it gives you stuff back. So that's decision support. But then you can also move into data products that are automated decisions and doing stuff for you. It's basically recommendation systems, right? So when you look at Netflix recommending movies back to you and Spotify doing your Discover Weekly, that's a kind of step on from what we were talking about, but also still data products.
You talked about a couple of pretty interesting data algorithms there. How does it work with your data science team? Now, I know that you are, amongst other things, a data scientist. You teach big companies how to do data science even. So how does it work? Well, you come in as a product person, yet there's an established data science function. Is there any sort of beef?
I, having been a data scientist, but not a typical one, have a pretty strong hypothesis that data scientists just want to build machine learning models. Like, they love to code. They're technical. They absolutely love it when Google and Microsoft are releasing all these new models and they can learn about them. So when they're told, when they come into a business, that actually their job is to do a bit of data engineering and then do a bit of data science and then create like a dashboard on top of their model so someone over there can actually use it, they're like, please stop. I just want to build data science models. But in business, we need to put that wrapper around them so we can use them as products and people can understand what they're saying. So actually, I think it's the opposite, Barry. They want someone to take all this other stuff off their hands. And when we take this stuff off their hands and spend time with the users in the business who are actually making decisions from the models, and we get better relationship with them, it means their work can be used more and it can be scaled. And they get an even bigger like thumbs up from the boss that they're saving more money, making more opportunities.
Do you enjoy doing this more than when you were doing pure data science?
It's hard. Okay.
For the benefit of those listening, there's a big smile on Lydia's face.
So when I joined consultancy at EY, I went in wanting to be technical and go super technical, hands on keys. I love to code. And I didn't get that, but chased the opportunities down and did a stint in Berlin in a software development team. And I was a data scientist working full agile. All I did was data science. And I actually found it really lonely. And I am quite extroverted, for those that know me. I like to talk. I like to speak to people. I like to collaborate. And when I was hands-on keys data science, not only did my boss at the time tell me I wasn't ever going to be a great data scientist who was super technical, I found it really lonely. So finding that niche between data science and talking to people and design and creativity, I think I am happier. I think I do prefer it.
I'll use the term, it sounds horrible, end users, but your colleagues
yeah.
who benefit from these tools. What sort of reactions have you had from them? Because I suspect for some of them, it's new. For some of them, it's, I don't know why you're there. And for some of them, it's going to be like really exciting. And where had you been all my life? What sort of spectrum have you had? And have all the reactions been?
I have had one, where have you been all my life, from a guy rolling out MLOps internally. I quite enjoyed that one. But I think it's, you're opening up the world of technicality, data science, analytics, bringing different data sets together to people that are non-technical, and you're bridging that gap. And they may have historically been scared by our field. There's a lot of people that go, oh, data, even now, they still do it. So when they see the power of what it can do, they're pretty excited. Or they do go, oh, there's a lot of work in design here, and oh, what about all the maintenance? And you've got to take a big step back and invest a lot of time and effort to do this. Can't we just answer all the questions and stay in the world we are? Because I quite like having someone on my side, like answering everything I need.
That's an interesting point, because what you're doing is you're kind of creating a kind of self-service world. And I suspect some of those people aren't used to that self-service. They'll have someone to go to. So all of a sudden you've taken that away, albeit you've given them some self-service tool, but I'm not sure everyone embraces that, do they? Or do they?
No, I don't think they do. And I think this comes down to another topic outside of products that I'm really passionate about at the minute, which is data fluency. And when people don't know what on earth this industry is all about, and they don't care about data sets, and they're not, don't get excited when they start to figure out all the possible stuff you can do, they don't care, they don't want to do it. But I think if you can get them to understand, and it sounds really corny and I don't want to say it, but the power of data, then they buy into it and they want to be a part of it. And it opens up career paths for people if they do move out of the current, here's a report, here's a number world, and they get involved.
That's a really interesting point. Do you think, so this whole data fluency, which you carefully didn't call data literacy,
consciously,
therefore implying loads of people are illiterate, do you think the community upskilling, whatever you want to call it, stuff sits nicely with product as opposed to how it used to maybe sit awkwardly with more technical data scientists? Is that something you're seeing success with?
Every time we roll out a product, we need to think about the enablement really carefully. We can't not roll a product without thinking about enablement. So therefore, you do have a sweet spot to roll it in. When you roll out a product, you've got a group of users who all care about the same thing. They're using the same thing. They need to know the same thing. So therefore, you've got an opportunity to teach them, and you've got an opportunity to upskill them in their data fluency at once. Whereas I think in the places it sat previously, it's like, we're going to do data fluency. And you go out to the organization and you put a big scheme in place and you kind of hope for the best. But people haven't necessarily got a reason to use it. You're just doing it because you know you need to do it. But if there's a product that they need to use, it gives them that cause to kind of rally around and a reason to get involved.
I mean, one thing I've come across and around the data fluency or the lack of it is storytelling. A lot of people are good at presenting a chart. When I say good, it's like, here's a chart. Little interpretation of what's going on. Where's the line between the products that you deliver to your internal customer base and the ability to tell the story from the data?
The way I think about this one is actually using an analogy of the weather. So you've got this explanatory versus exploratory balance when it comes to storytelling and everything we do in product. So if you think about all the different ways you can consume weather data to know if it's going to be sunny or rain tomorrow, we love that in the UK. On one end of the spectrum, you can pop BBC News on and Thomas Schabernacker will explain everything to you. He will tell you the story of the data that is explaining what's going to happen with the weather. That's one end. It's completely like spoon feed. I don't have to think. I just listen. Then in the middle, you've got like the BBC weather app that you can go into, and it explains it a little bit with some charts and graphics, and you need a bit more data fluency, but you can explore it a bit more. And then at the other end of the spectrum, which is where I go, believe it or not, as a data professional, you've got all of these maps and the like rainfall falling over the UK, and you move the sliders and you see what's going to happen, and they put the predictability of stuff in here. And that is super exploratory down the other end of the spectrum. And because products are built for use cases and to solve business problems, sometimes we will need to properly tell the story, and we will need to put something like Thomas Schabernacker on the news presenting the weather and spoon feed, especially if the data literacy isn't there. But the more you move to exploratory, the more you can start to kind of democratize out the knowledge, and the less you need a central hub.
So the use of the data in itself is a form of data literacy education.
100%.
I'm very interested in the diverse industries that you've worked in. You've kept a similar focus, data science, moving to product and blending it together. But I'm not sure you could have picked different. In my perception of a Lloyd's of London insurer is an old guy with a briefcase rifling through paper, making gut feel decisions. Then you move to Zoopla, which I imagine probably had a slide and a ball pit in the office or something equally gruesome. Are there common themes and challenges that you've seen across all of those different industries? It's question A, and in terrible interviewer style, I'll do a sub question B. What's the biggest miss that you've seen?
The common themes, and it might be because of the time and like what's going on in this industry at the moment, is excitement around data science and the buzzwording of everything. I've been in the prime moment of everyone going big data, and everyone going AI, especially in consultancy. I love consultancy, but my God, did we overuse AI. So I think the buzz and the excitement I've definitely seen everywhere. Whether they knew what to do with it or not is a different story. And then something I don't think people have got quite right is the balance between experimentation and actually getting stuff into production that's adding business value. So when I look at insurance in Lloyd's of London, old industry, we did a lot of cool experiments. We were doing actually some like pretty good high caliber stuff, but none of it got into production because every time we went out to the business, they were like, well, they didn't say this, but this is what they're thinking. I'm retiring in 5 years' time. If you implement this, I'm not going to have a job. And I don't understand what this geospatial analytics thing is. And actually, my gut feels pretty good because I've been doing this for 10 years. So, you know, experiments never got off the ground and into prod, no matter the people you had. When I think about consulting, outside of the consulting, when I was in internal product development there, I was working in internal AI product development. They, again, did loads of cool experiments and they built stuff, properly got it into production, but they didn't get the business casing right. Zoopla, other end of the spectrum completely. So this one, no one's got it right so far in my book. So they did all their experiments, didn't get a single data science model into prod, and then went, something's not quite right here, and rebalanced. I think, and I'm saying it because it's my current role, but I think we can get the balance a bit better where we are. We're investing in MLOps to get our models into prod in data science. We're building a data product functionality. We're taking a step back and going, right, actually, we need to stop being a service function and like think about how we identify opportunities ourselves and proactively deliver. But if we don't get that business casing right and identify the right opportunities up front, we'll build a whole load of cool stuff and no one will use it and no one will see the value, and then I'll be out of a job.
But it sounds like your purpose is embedding skills, capabilities through insight and what have you. So are we going from a world where something is new, where something will be embedded as BAU? And if that's true, what does the data function look like in the future?
I think, yes, we've been new in the past and people didn't know that you could create a Tableau or a Power BI dashboard. And then they realized, actually, it's quite easy and you don't need to have 20 years of experience to do it. You can learn it in a few weeks or months. So that gets embedded. But then I think as the stuff that was new before is embedded, there's always going to be new bits coming through. And organisations are all on different journeys and levels of maturity, which means actually the data science stuff that's becoming BAE for some companies is becoming new for others. And then once they go beyond that, maybe they'll go into deep learning. Like, there's always something new in the industry. There's always like those frontline researchers who are doing new stuff. And that will always be at some points new for us to embed. But at what point does the data function stop? And that's technology beyond just data. I haven't answered that one yet in my head.
All right, plenty of time. I'm quite keen that the whole industry doesn't implode quite at this minute, Tony.
Well, for all our sakes. So, I mean, just picking, you know, this theme and the role of the CDO. I mean, I've come across industries where they've kind of bundled data in with other expert skills such as product development or IT or both. Do you have a view on that? Have you seen that? Does it work? Is it too early?
Again, it depends on the maturity of the organization. I think if you're, hopefully not right now this is the case, but some organizations are still only just realizing that you need to pay attention to your data, then you need someone to get data on the agenda. And if you embed that in another role, you're kind of running before you can walk, right? You need someone to shout from the rooftops, like, folks, let's talk about data. Like, it's important. It needs to be at C-suite level. And you need to get your pipeline of talent coming in. You need the new grads in the industry to understand that you're taking this seriously to recruit. But once you get beyond that point and your C-suite are more data fluent and they understand how data is being used and you're moving towards creating products rather than answering how many cucumber questions, then I think there might be opportunity to merge. And I haven't seen it anywhere yet, but at Zoopla, we as a data team did report into the chief product officer. So we had a product and tech function. So all of the development for the app and the website sat alongside us as a data team. We had analysts embedded in product teams developing for the app and the website. And we worked as one, all reporting into chief product officer, no chief data officer. And because he got data and because he spoke for us and we had a great director of data and analytics who could also speak with him, it worked. But digital native, they don't have all the legacy to deal with, a little bit of legacy, but not anywhere near as much as a 150-year-old retailer. They could get away with it and it was working.
So going on to that 150-year-old retailer, which we both know very well, what do you think the biggest opportunity for data and insight products is in retail? Because the reason I joined retail is because it's so fast moving and there's a lot of data and you can do something and results change quickly. Why do you do product in retail? Why did you choose? You could have gone anywhere. Why did you choose to go into retail? Don't say because of the staff discount, although it is pretty good.
Well, I don't want to say because I like shopping, because I don't want to sell that part of me, but a little bit of the answer is actually that. So I think retail is one of the simpler industries. We buy things, we make some things, we grow some things, and we sell them. And I can comprehend that business model, and I can see the opportunities in it, having not worked in it for years. If I compare my time in consulting, where I did infrastructure, energy, I didn't do much oil and gas, but I veered away from it. I just couldn't comprehend how you get oil out of the ground and have to do all of that. There's some cool opportunities there, but I think you've got this piece about enabling people who work in retail and may not have a data background to use it. And you're getting out there and you're helping them and helping them upskill. I love that side of it. But also all the supply chain and the operational side of things, it kind of fascinates me. Like, we can all relate to retail. We all buy things. We all go to the supermarket. And that means that you can relate to the journey of how did that tin of baked beans get onto the shelf into your basket and then you cook it for dinner for your kids. And helping people optimize that. I remember my optimization module at uni and I absolutely loved it. There's a little bit of a kind of technical geek in me that likes that side of things too.
The reality of it all.
Yeah, you can see the impact, can't you? You see the trucks arrive more quickly. You see the cages filled optimally versus like half filled. You can then go into the branches and the shops and actually speak to the people doing it and see how you've improved their lives and made them happier. So, yeah, I think it's the relatability of it and it's ripe for it. you can talk about all of the like having augmented reality in stores and all of that jazzy stuff. And yeah, we'll get there. But actually, there's some really cool operational stuff that's quite fun to explore.
Very good. You'll be pleased to know you're almost at the end of your time in what we've called the data dungeon down here. Again, you might not be able to see it on the podcast, but...
It's dungeon-like, isn't it?
It's certainly dungeon-like, yeah. And freezing cold. I think there's a 20-degree temperature swing between here and outside. We always ask our guests the same question. So here we go. What is the best advice you never took?
When I was in education, and even now, I've always chased success and achievement. And there was a bit of me when I was at college and uni, I was like, I need to be successful. I want to be that business person. So I chased it and I was like, investment banking's the one for me. I went down the route, I did all of the internships, and I ultimately didn't go into it because I didn't get an offer at the end of my internship. So like there was that. But my mum said to me, like, use your creativity and go after something that you really love. It feels like you're working a lot for the status, and you come home and you're exhausted on the weekends after doing PowerPoint at 2 a.m. genuinely. The magic roundabout is when you left and came straight back in a taxi and just got changed and had a shower at home. And you don't know any different when you're a grad. So she told me to chase the creativity, and it's taken me a little bit of a few years and a few different jobs to start to realise that actually that's okay. And I'm starting to get into it now and exercising that at work, and then also finding hobbies that I can do it outside of work. So yeah, I don't need a linear career path. I didn't quite get that straight away. My mum knew. She was a head teacher of a nursery school, but she knew that that was the case.
That's really interesting. There's this concept, the squiggly career. I don't know if you've seen, though, Helen Tupper. I'll give her a cred. You can buy me a cup of tea, Helen. And that's a real thing. And you described that really, really well. And in terms of success, of course, the pinnacle for everyone's career is appearing on the Data Files podcast. So
you can tick
that one off. Thank you very much, Lydia. That was amazing. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming.